Hi, good morning. This is Candia Sanders, and you are on the Odyssey program. Mike Schultz today is off playing and enjoying his day, and so I get to have the whole show to myself, and I have an inspired person to join me today. But before I get to that, I want to have everybody be reminded of Mike's Sands of Time DVD and have everybody take the time to go online to our website and check it out. He's done some incredible research on old architecture throughout the world that has incredible energy and power to it, and it is worth your time to check out his DVD. So if you have not, please be sure to take the time to check out our website and look at the Sands of Time. It's worth your efforts. See, one of those kinds of things that would be a great gift, one of those last-minute things you can't come up with something wonderful, this is it. So anyway, who I have on today is an incredible woman. Her name is Mary Simmons. She is a teacher. She has umpteen degrees in English, but the other important thing about Mary, she's been a metaphysician since high school. She's very intuitive. She teaches intuitively, and so I would like everyone to welcome Mary this morning. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Candia. Thank you.
It's important that the people know how incredible you are, and that's why I wanted to she's going, okay, sure. What Mary does is special because she does it so innately. It's so much a part of who she is to teach high school kids through intuition coupled with intellectualism, and I think that's really important to me. That's all about combining the head and the heart, and that's what I find in today's world that we don't do enough of. Mary has done this for a long, long time, and the kids, of course, get the benefit of that. So,
Candy, I appreciate you saying that. Let me just tell the people who are listening that for those of you who are old souls, there should be some benefits at the end of all those lifetimes. And I was just recently told by my guides that I probably had about 400 lives. I know that sounds like a lot.
I love it. That's awesome.
But I know. It sounds ridiculous. But when we go into what you believe and what I believe in that lifetimes are not necessarily sequential, but that we have parallel lives, we can incarnate at the same time as our physical self now in another body. Our soul is multidimensional. And so when you look at it that way, 400 lifetimes maybe isn't that much. But you know what? You should have some benefits at the end of that. And I think that one of those benefits can be intuition and the ability to use it well in your chosen career. And you're certainly doing that.
Well,
so anyway, thank you.
I couldn't have said that better. That's absolutely fabulous. Because it's really true. Now, I want to take what you just said and explain that too.
Okay.
On another level, and that is the parallel lifetime concept. I think what happens so often is that people start talking about past lives because it's an easier way of describing it.
Yes.
Because
We think linearly.
That word.
Yes.
Well, it's like you can't uncrack an egg. It's
right.
It's not possible. So that's how our mind works. The point is we've created this time concept. However, what I've been playing around with, it's been really fun, and I've been teaching these classes, it's the and I know I'm not the only one, but it's the time grid and using almost like what I would call a computer paper where it's a gridded piece of paper so people can then access it at that level.
Uh-huh.
So you can see a dot on the paper and that the next intersection is another lifetime.
Right.
So you can intersect and hop on the time grid to any time frame because it's all happening right now. And I think that if you put it on a flat piece of paper, because then we can wrap our minds around it, then you can literally hop in and out of those lifetimes. I also feel that those lifetimes affect who we are today, and we can affect them. And so everything you do here helps the overall concept of oneness, so that if you're a better person today, when you were a Roman soldier, you also will benefit from your intuition in this world.
Have
you ever experienced that?
You know, not directly. I can't say that I know because I'm better in this lifetime in certain ways that I have affected other lifetimes. I haven't seen that, you know, in a dream state or intuitively in a very direct sense. Have you?
That's a really good question, and I'm so used to asking the questions to throw it back at me. I have to think about that for a
minute.
I feel that there have been times when, yes, I have had, and I'll give you a story. How's that?
This is it's
an interesting story. It was the first time, because when I work with energy and healing of the energetic body, you know, every time I get to a block, there's always a reason. So there's something else I need to learn, one other concept that needs to be brought into the picture. And one of those actually happened to myself. I finally said to the universe, you know what? I'm tired of being the guinea pig stop already. But this happened to me probably in 99, 2000, somewhere in there. So it's been several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting at a table, and I was talking to several people, and I got up, and all of a sudden, I could move. My back locked up. Well, I thought, oh, excuse me just a minute. I will go in the other room and do my little magic on it, and I will be fine. Only it didn't happen. And so I'm thinking, what is this? And so I thought maybe it's because I felt inclined I need to go back and talk and be social, all those things. Well, then I continued to work on it, and it still didn't get better. And then it was another week, and it still hadn't improved. Well, I'm used to having things happen immediately, so I knew there was something else that needed to be looked at. And I kept asking, okay, what is it you need to show me? And I finally picked the piece up that there was a parallel lifetime happening.
Mm-hmm.
And in essence, it was a bleed-through. I was getting a bleed-through energy where the soul, this aspect of myself, was a slave. I'm not quite sure where in the South it was. I was a large man. I was probably 6 foot tall, very large man. And I had been hit by this huge 2x4 on the lower back. And
as punishment by a slave owner?
Absolutely. And I was taken down to my knees and then basically just hauled off with the rope, just taken off. Now, the next part of the scene that I picked up on is the slave was in a hut clear out the back property.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this tiny little African woman, and she was truly African. She had not been in the States very long because she wasn't speaking broken dialect. And she spoke basically African, and she had her rattles and her whistles and her bells basically in the back hut trying to heal him. Now, what was great, she was very intuitive. She was aware that my presence was there. So then we combined energies and healed or worked on the healing of his back together. And it then threw me back to the presence, and that my back was unable to heal. So that's where I do feel I had a personal experience where, yes, it did happen right then and there.
Oh, interesting. So the significance of that for you was to show that your consciousness now could go back and combine with this other soul who was trying to heal you.
Right. It was amazing.
Oh, my gosh.
It was one of those kind of, this is huge kind of moments, right?
Yeah.
And so I've used that example with others because to me it was so profound. But it also goes into what we talked about before, is how it interacts with the whole concept of oneness. Because that lifetime is still just as active on the time grid as we are right now on the radio.
Right.
And so he's progressed in his life, you know, and moved on in his world as we have, because that was how many years ago. Now, is it the same number of years? I have no idea between the two, because there is so little that we actually know. I had another woman who is a channeler who had told me, I don't know how many years, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that we literally looked through reality, but through a pinhole, in a piece of paper, and that's all we see.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, I know it's much grander than that. And now with quantum physics proving so much.
Some of our listeners today have probably seen the movie What the Bleep, Do We Know?
Yeah.
And I think that movie really helps us understand.
Yeah, thank you for that. For all the producers, directors, actors in that, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that that piece of art on film really does help us understand that we are looking through a pinhole and that it's so much larger. At the same time, though, I'm sure that we were given these bodies and this three-dimensional scheme for a reason. I mean, it helps us develop our souls, you know, in some way. And, I mean, we weren't really meant to be on all levels at all times. I mean, we are meant to be here on Earth and, you know, to be earthbound in a way. I mean, we chose this.
Oh, absolutely. Now, think about this one. This is another wild piece on the time grid. Just imagine it. All time is simultaneous. Your first life is happening and your last life
yes.
is happening.
Yes.
All at the same time. And we're doing this rotor-rooter of a dance between all the lifetimes.
Yeah.
And again, literally, you think about some of the lifetimes. Yeah, it's definitely rotor-rooter time. I mean, it's not always the most pleasant.
No.
However, we, on some level, choose that.
Yeah.
And we're constantly choosing that.
Yes, yes.
And that's the biggest part, is that we are constantly choosing that. Now, if you look at it that way, if everyone were to look at it that it's all happening right now, and you don't know actually which lifetime this is, it
mm-hmm.
almost makes you think that, it reminds me of old Steel the Cross song, "We May Never Pass This Way Again."
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
if you knew that, and maybe for those, you know, I don't know how many Christians out there are listening to this. I'm not trying to stereotype, but
mm-hmm.
they believe in one lifetime. Then if that's really the belief system, then it should be all the more that you live with graciousness and
right.
attitude and with this sense of awe going, oh, my God, this is amazing. Look
yeah.
at this tree. Look at that blue sky. Oh, the smell of that flower is incredible.
Right, where we get to focus on one lifetime and treasure it. And appreciate the details. Yeah, where if you knew everything was happening at once, you know, and you have this huge soul awareness, it's very different. You know, and I think probably both, you know, develop your soul. So, yeah, that's very cool.
It's fun to think about.
Yeah.
And it makes you, at least it's been that way for me. It makes me, I've been singing that song in the back of my head. It came out. I haven't heard that album in, you know, 30 years or something, whenever that came out.
Yeah.
I think it is close to 30 years ago.
Uh-huh.
That
yeah.
it was so relevant that it makes me think about, okay, that tree is pretty incredible. What if
mm-hmm.
I never see it again?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what
mm-hmm.
if I choose not to come back again? Maybe this is it.
Mm-hmm.
We
mm-hmm.
don't know this.
Yeah, yeah.
So it makes you think about it. In fact, last night, you know, it's really fun. Today being the 21st of December, to me,
mm-hmm.
this is more the beginning of the new year rather than January 1st, because that's some bogus date that they chose way back when to say this is the beginning of the new year,
mm-hmm.
is that the 21st is when everything changes. We start to return to the light. So to me, this is a really auspicious day that we get to
mm-hmm.
be on the air.
Yeah, yesterday was the shortest day of the year, and now it's reversed, and it's going to longer,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Because today
yes.
is the solstice.
Or is today the longest or the shortest day?
Okay, I've always thought, I don't know, it's either yesterday or today. I'm not sure.
You know, it matters, a whole minute or two between the two. It's just the concept that we now are moving into this next stage of
mm-hmm.
being able to, you know, to kind of hunker down and at the same time start gathering our seeds for which to plant.
Mm.
To me, this is not only relevant for this year, this passage, but for every lifetime,
mm-hmm.
every aspect of ourselves. I think we could use that analogy.
Mm-hmm.
Last night, my son and I watched The Family Stone, which,
uh-huh.
you know, it's a Christmas movie. It's a very funny Christmas movie. And yet there's a lot of drama in it. And the main character, I don't know if you've seen it, is Diane Keaton. And she
mm-hmm.
is, you find out through the course of the movie, is dying of cancer. Well, throughout the movie, you catch her enjoying every single second
mm-hmm.
of her children's faces and the snow coming down. And I thought, how beautiful is that? Why does it take death,
mm-hmm.
the fear of death, it should be the fear of death, but it's really what it is,
mm-hmm.
for us to be inspired into that gratitude on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can think about it, too. So many of the people out there that have manifested huge amounts of whatever, whether it's abundance, love, great health, all of the good things, those people live in gratitude. And I think
mm-hmm.
if everybody on every level could live with gratitude.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
things they're grateful for.
Oh, yeah. And you know, all the really difficult events that we've experienced here in the Northwest recently. You know, we've had a ton of rain. We've broken records with rainfall. That caused a lot of flooding. A lot of people lost their homes. Then we had snow, which we haven't had in a few years, and then we had the huge windstorm, and some people are still out of power in our area, and then we have some folks in the immigrant population who couldn't read the warning labels and have died of carbon monoxide in their homes.
My childhood home of 45 years has a tree through the roof.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. It came down in a windstorm.
Yeah. Well, I think that maybe the soil was so softened by the rain that we had in November that a lot of the trees just swapped over. We had a house in Kirkland that had 10 trees on it. You know, that's incredible. And I think people get kind of psyched up about global warming, and they're thinking, oh, my gosh, the end is near, and our weather's changing, we have no control. At the same time, I think that there are positives that come out of it as well.
Oh, I would agree.
You know, I mean, people, stop and talk to each other. They check on each other to see if they're okay when you don't have power. You know, we're concerned about the elderly. We were very concerned about the immigrant population getting the message about how not to drag in, your grill from the outside or use a generator, indoors. And people became very concerned about each other. Sure, they were mad. there were moments of anger at the gas stations.
That's a brilliant point, though. It brings us more into a community thinking, like the front porch eras of days gone by, where you take the time to care for the people next to you.
Yeah. Yeah, and we live in such a fast-paced technological world now that really does separate us because we're expected to do, be out, work, and the technology, as fun as it can be, does separate us from each other and from ourselves. I mean, in my opinion.
Oh, I totally 100% agree. It's supposed to make it easier, and all of a sudden, my life gets so much more complicated that I just want to throw up my hands.
And then all of a sudden, it's down. It's gone. It's out. And we look at each other, and I heard from kids, so boring. I didn't know what to do with myself. My kid didn't say that, but I did hear other kids say that. Oh, it was just terrible. Where the adults were kind of looking at them going, oh, my gosh, what did you miss growing up there, kid?
Yeah, they didn't go outside enough.
Yeah. I think that this is a concern with a lot of parents now, is that their kids are so involved in technology that they really don't even have a grasp on the world around them, so that when the electricity goes out, they have nothing. What is there to do?
Yeah. Isn't that sad to think that they get so bored?
That's a concern for me.
We didn't even think about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it is sad. Unless there's snow, and with snow, they can usually go out and find something to do, which is great. But if there's not that, what do you do? Don't know.
What did we do when you grew up? Funny? And you tell them, well, we did this. They look at
Yeah, you suggest reading a book, forget it. A board game, oh, that's not fun. Well, actually, it is really fun, but, Yeah. So, I think that there are positives that come out of it. I mean, our world definitely is changing. I think we all have to admit it. And yet, we have to, I think, believe in divine providence that somehow this is all part of the way it's supposed to be.
Absolutely.
So.
Well, I was talking to another intuitive / psychic last week, because we all need to have people to play off of. We need our mentors. And, and Mary has been one of those people in my life, because I love her intuition. And this is a new woman in my life. I have known her for a couple of years, but we talked last week, and we're throwing back ideas back and forth. Because it's really fun to brainstorm that way, and also, again, to be each other's mirrors. I feel we all need our mentors, because the universe created it that way. We can't see our own stuff. I can be as intuitive as the day is long about your stuff or about somebody, a caller calling in. However, when it comes to my own stuff, I just want to shake my head, go, okay, I'm really dense on this. I need some help. So we were talking last week, and I gave her some of my feelings about the Earth and the shifts on the planet, and she said, so that is so good to hear. She goes, because of, this goes back to what you were saying about all the Earth changes. She goes, she she has had this sense that the whole Northwest would be flooded. Well, I just don't go there. I think we're going to have changes, and it's just like what happened to New Orleans, but I don't feel like the whole Northwest is going under.
Yeah.
There have been predictions of those types of things. I don't go that radical, I guess, is a better word. It doesn't mean that we're not going to have exactly what we're having, though, which is pretty extreme weather that affects all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes us think that, just like you had said earlier, nature is nature. And it doesn't care whether we live or die. It doesn't care that those three climbers were just killed up on the mountain. It, we take our chances as we walk the planet. But there's part of that that's going to be adrenaline rush as well.
Yeah, I mean, people make those choices. I mean, you know, mountain climbers are doing it out of choice. I mean, they know what the risks are. I really believe they do. And yet we've had some examples of people out in the wilderness who really didn't know what they were doing recently,
yeah,
you know.
And San Francisco.
Yeah, yeah. And I really think that those examples can show us, you don't fool with Mother Nature. You have to have respect. Nature is beautiful and can inspire us and show us all kinds of incredible things. And we are a part of nature with our, you know, in our bodies. But at the same time, nature is neutral. I mean, it's doing its own thing. And you have to know and respect the power. And I think we get, again, technology and our modern life has separated us from that knowing. But I think it's just common sense.
Common sense. Actually, that is a really good point. Do you realize, my son, my 15-year-old son and I were talking about common sense yesterday. I don't know if it's technology, but you don't see common sense as much as you used to. Basic common sense is because I think we have come to rely upon electricity, electronics, computers, everything so much that we've forgotten to use our own brain.
Yeah.
And common sense.
Yeah.
As to what to do and what not to do. So you push things where they shouldn't. And again, the universe doesn't care. That's the great thing. Everybody says it cares. It does, but it doesn't. I mean, because it's such a cycle. So if you literally die, you really don't. It's just your outer shell.
Mm-hmm.
So if you die on the mountain's not going to care. The nature's not going to care.
Mm-hmm.
It's still, in essence, kind of giving you a loving embrace.
Yeah.
An avalanche over you is a loving embrace. It's just, doesn't necessarily mean it's good for you.
I know. It doesn't sound that way, but, I mean, it was a choice to be there. And it's nature. It's so different, you know, than what we, I don't know,
no,
what we're
I
used
totally
to.
Agree with that.
Yeah.
I find it very fascinating. Now, let's go a different direction
here.
If you would find, if you were to think of any stories over the course of your life or incidences that you find or that you remember that were one of those epiphany moments, those profound moments, is there anything you might want to share or an incident where your own personal healing, and healing to me is not just, okay, my right knee hurts, can you fix it? It to me, healing is on so many levels. It's on the emotional level, it's on the mental level. And then, of course, on a physical level. So, do you have any events or a moment in your own personal life?
Well, I think we all do, for one thing. And one thing, as a teacher, I teach juniors and seniors in high school. And one of the things that I try to do with my kids often is to talk about experiences that are a little bit off the map. You know, dreams. Times when you knew something was going to happen and it did.
Well, Jack, real quickly, sorry, because I know you and everybody else doesn't know you, that Mary's really fine window, I really believe that her incredible doorway into intuition has always come to her through her dreams. I mean, that has been her avenue in, and that she has had incredible, profound experiences from your dream time, and that knowledge and information you get there. So continue, but I just think that's real important.
Well, it's been a wonderful gift, and I'm hoping that the audience also understands what you do for a living as well, Candy. And we'll talk about that maybe more in a minute.
Okay.
But let me just answer what you're saying as far as really profound individual personal experiences. I think, we all have them. I think we need to honor them more. I think we need to acknowledge them. The thing is that they're often so mysterious, we don't often get the whole story when we have an experience like that. And so we tend to just kind of shrug it off and say, well, I don't get it. You know, I can't figure this out. But I had something recent happen, and I don't think I've talked to you about it, where, of course, I teach Shakespeare. I teach Macbeth to my juniors, and I teach Hamlet to my seniors. And I feel a very close connection to Shakespeare, as many people do. And every year I show a biography film about Shakespeare to my juniors, and also a biography DVD, a different one, to my seniors about Shakespeare's life. And his life, of course, was fascinating. I mean, he wasn't just a fascinating playwright with incredible plays. He was also a fascinating person. And he lived during a time when plague would routinely sweep London and other parts of Europe. And, you know, thousands of people died. In fact, Shakespeare lost all of his siblings to plague. And when he did marry and had three children, his only son died of plague when he was 11 years old.
Well, I didn't know that.
And his son's name was Hamnet, H-A-M-N-E-T, and then he went on to write the beautiful play Hamlet, I believe, in his son's honor. But what happens every time, and I am not kidding you, every time I show these films, they're so poignant to me. When he loses his son, and also when he fights with his daughters when they're older, and then he goes on to write King Lear, which is all about an older king fighting with his daughters, I cry. Shakespeare's life makes me cry and cry and cry. And usually it is about the child issues. It's about his issues with his children. And I wonder about that, and I think there has to be something in my past life experience, you know, and I want to ask Candy about it. Well, I haven't done that. So what happened a couple nights after I cried in class again, and my kids think it's amusing that I'm so into the literature, but I dreamt of this little boy, and I saw him in a crib, and it was a long time ago, and it was in Europe. And he had kind of a little Dutch boy haircut. He was probably about 4 years old, and he was this adorable little boy, and he's just looking at me. And I know he's my son, and I'm pretty sure that he dies of plague.
So there's your connection.
There's my connection. And then, and this actually scared me, I woke up for a second, and I was awake in bed, and I looked off to the left, and I saw a black man sitting by my desk, not looking at me, but just a nice-looking black man. And I mean, that's a little scary because I don't live with any black men. And all of a sudden, and I jumped. And I heard my guide say, he was once your slave, he was also your son.
Wow.
And I thought, oh my gosh. So I have this soul, or this soul who's very important to me. I don't know who he is. But I saw him in two different lifetimes, one in a dream and one when I was waking up. And it showed me just a huge circle of life that plays out, where I was somehow the owner of this person whose soul I love very much. I was also his mother, and I lost him when the plague swept through during some lifetime in Europe. And it made me understand why, when I show the Shakespeare films now, I cry every time Shakespeare loses his son.
Oh.
Does that make sense?
It does. Well, and what I just wanted to share, too, is that one of the reasons you ended up losing him is because you tried to keep him bound by being a slave. And it was to prove that you can't own anyone.
Oh, boy.
Even though you loved him as your slave.
Yeah.
Right? You did. You loved him. And he was very steadfast throughout that lifetime for you. That's
mm-hmm.
why he showed up to you. And that, to me, was almost what I would call a bleed-through, because what you saw was just
okay.
real.
Okay, that makes sense.
As the bed you were sleeping in, right?
Right.
It feels as if that's what the issue was around that.
Okay.
Is that that's one of the reasons why you lost your son early. And
okay.
To have that the greater compassion show up. But also,
okay.
This is something where you and I have talked about, and you might have to remind me, and I'll probably
uh-huh.
tap into it a little more, is that I feel that during Shakespeare that you were one of the actors
right.
that were involved in the... What's the theater in the round?
The Globe.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
I can see it, but did the word come to me? I know the word. Come to me, forget about it.
Yeah.
that there were also other little theaters in the area that you know, were feeling actors and people who wanted to be a part of it. I see you as one of those men that basically, prior to that, didn't have a lot, did not have a job of sorts other than whatever you could pick up for pennies along the way, and yet you had this knack of being the storyteller, the comedian, which you still have now. You still have a great sense of humor, which is, you know, it's coming from the British. I know that sounds like such a stereotype, but the British truly have a great sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And if we as Americans could adopt a little more of that, why didn't we adopt more of that when we all came across the ocean? I'm not sure. But anyway, that sense of humor is what helped you on stage.
Okay.
And got you in when there were all those people lined up going, I need a job, I need a job. Can you act? Could you put on, would you be willing to put on a woman's dress, you know, and talk in a high voice type of thing? And I see you where you were a part of that. And so, of course, when the plays would be brought down, and I feel that you might have met Shakespeare.
Yeah.
I don't see you as bosom buddies necessarily, but I see a sense of honor and awe.
Right.
Because of his abilities, and then for you to be on stage and getting to act them out. I also have a sense that you came back later at another, isn't that funny, I'm putting it in a past time frame, but so you get this, is at another time frame where you came back as a female and went on stage.
Mm-hmm.
In the early process of when women were finally allowed on stage to be able to act and to be able to take some of the female roles.
Mm-hmm.
That had always been to men, and I get the sense that you were one of these women that were able to get on stage and to prove to the populace that, yes, women do have the sensibilities to be able to get up and do just as good a job as a man could.
Right.
And help change that sense of,
male chauvinism?
Yeah, that would work. Towards that genre. And that you then had a great impact.
Cool.
It's the type of thing, your name may never have gone into the history books, and yet, again, maybe in some obscure book on history, we could find your name that says, this woman went on stage and, you know.
It was a very exciting time when women were finally allowed to go on stage. And I have so much, love for Shakespeare that I probably did want to do that at least more than once, but
and now you're teaching it. I love it.
Yeah. Now I get to teach it, but I hope the listeners understand that, you know, what you're doing here is I'm relating my experience, and then you're going into your talent, which is to actually access that information for me, where you said. See, that totally makes sense to me, the dynamic where I would see the black man and be told that he was my slave, to see the little boy who that black man was also, but that I was not allowed to own and I was not allowed to possess, because we don't possess each other and we don't own each other. As much as we love each other, we can't do that, right?
Absolutely.
So that does totally make sense to me. I was reading a karmic astrology book yesterday. That basically told me that I was extremely possessive in my past lives. You know, so that all kind of falls into shape there. You know, it all makes sense. So, yeah, and I think that's one thing that I've tried to remind myself, as passionate as I am about my own child in this life, as much as I, you know, adore him more than any other person, I know that he's not mine. And I know that he's God's. And I have thanked the universe for giving him, you know, to me to care for, but I know that I don't own him, and I think I finally have that message.
That's a hard one.
It is a hard one.
I think it's very difficult. In some ways, and this is not in any way, shape, or form to discount men, I do feel that we have enough roles as men and women to experience both sides, but I feel that can be more difficult on women, and I think it's just because of the birthing process. The fact that you carry that child within you for 9 months. It felt like 12, but, you know, for nine months, that you have that connection, that umbilical cord, that psychic umbilical cord that I think is more difficult to cut. And in that way, that's the part, I guess, to remind you that don't be too hard on yourself with it, is because of that psychic umbilical cord.
I think, Yeah, and you're always very good about that whenever we have a reading, to remind me not to be so hard on myself for all of the, you know, mistakes that I made in numerous lifetimes. But, I mean, that we learn. That's how we learn.
Well,
so,
we all make those mistakes.
Yes.
And, see, this is where I love doing exactly what we're doing is because Mariel has something, and then I get to go off and figure it out. One of the things Mary and I did one day that was really fun is that she would come up with somebody in literature or in history that she knows a lot about. I feel like I'm fairly well-read, but I don't have the depth of detail in a lot of her specific areas. And then she would say, well, what about this person? So then I would tap into that life.
Yeah, I would ask her, for instance, what was Emily Dickinson like? And she would tap into her energetic pool and just talk about not the poet, not what we see on the page, but the human being. You know, what was Mark Twain like? And I've read enough biographical material, and Candia really hasn't.
No, I haven't.
And she would be spot on. And it was absolutely fascinating. We talked about writing a book about it sometime.
I still think we should.
Yeah.
Because
it would be fun.
You know, to convince people that I haven't read the biography.
That's where
it's been really great as friends through this, that Mary has this information that I don't, and so then I get the benefits of that.
Mm-hmm.
So we've shared our gifts with one another, and it's wonderful because what Mary has that I stated at the beginning of the hour that I think is really important is the combination of the head and the heart, the combination of the intellect combined with the intuition. And I really feel that this is where, you know, this big insurgence of 2012 comes in, that to me it's this awakening of the intuition combined with just the head. For centuries,
uh-huh,
we have been into just the head.
What do you mean by 2012, Candy?
Well, that's when the Mayan calendar stopped, the Hopi calendar stopped, the Hebrew calendar.
You're talking about the year 2010.
Yeah,
2012.
That's when everything stopped.
That's when the Mayan calendar stopped.
It's over. And
okay.
So you have a lot of people that are going into the doomsday group. You go into Costco and they have all these books now by a particular author, and it goes into all the end of days and revelation, and we're, you know, it's Armageddon and all that, and then,
uh-huh,
of course it's been validated by all the wild weather, the wars, etc. However, I don't feel that to be true. It's a part of the experience, but with every single second, we can choose to shift that.
Right.
Every single day, and that goes back into this whole consciousness of the one. Right, where we can change the evolutionary process, not only where we are right now and move it forward, but on all levels. So it was been predicted that things would really shift. Now, a lot of people out there will say that we're moving into a highly spiritual level. Yes, I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
However, I don't feel that we're going to totally negate everything we have here either. And this, to me, has been what I would say to be a very profound aha. And that is, to me, it's not about us going off and living some quiet life as a hermit,
mm-hmm,
and gaining this inner meditative concept and connection to God.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I believe I've experienced it, I don't feel that it's about going and living in an ashram, being a nun, being, you know,
mm-hmm,
doing your 355 vows before Becca, whatever. I don't feel that's what this whole concept of spirit on the planet is all about. Now,
mm-hmm,
I'm sure I'm going to rattle a lot of people's cages when I say that.
No, it's okay.
My
Keep
sense
going.
Of it really is about what I started the hour with, and that's gratitude, the daily gratitude,
uh-huh,
of walking in nature, honoring your family, your,
mm-hmm,
children. When you try and walk away from that, I was working with a gentleman back east, really cool guy. He's into acupuncture and chiropractic and massage therapy. He's doing a lot of great things for the community and for kids, or for people, and opening up their awareness. He wants to strive and strive and strive for higher spiritualism and always reaching for the higher level.
Uh-huh.
However, at the same time, he's negating everyday life.
Yeah.
And it's everyday life that's where the true spiritual profoundness comes,
mm-hmm,
in. That, to me,
mm-hmm,
is the awakening. It's not trying to extricate or separate ourselves from those. It's the combination of the head and the heart And to me, that's where this 2012 goes into play, where we connect it and that we are in reverence every day with our daily life. It's chop wood, carry water.
Okay, so yeah. Yeah. That's an old Alan Watts title.
Right.
Chop wood, carry water.
Yeah.
There's also the old title, Be Here Now.
Right.
Which is the same. It's the same idea. Where that's the reason why we're here. If we just wanted to be peaceful and we wouldn't have incarnated. I mean, I think that we're here to face the conflict, but we're also here to love in the face of that conflict. You know, we're here for the struggle. I really believe that. It doesn't mean that we can't have peace and we need peace. I mean, we need to find balance, but that's part of the whole juggling act.
Well, yeah, it's almost like when you're on the other side and you're sitting around and you choose with everybody that you're going to hang out with for the next lifetime. It's like I get to sign up for this role. It's like signing up. It's like going on a stage call for Days
yeah.
of Our Lives.
Yeah.
Or All My Children. It's a soap opera here.
And yeah.
We forget, we complain about it, but that's the reality. We love the drama because there's an excitement and there's an aliveness with it.
Mm-hmm.
So go jump into that with the gratitude and the awareness and make every moment of that a spiritual awakening.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that you have to go off and like I said, this one client, all he wanted to do was go off and meditate and leave his family behind. It's like, excuse me, Mary, you had two children, you're responsible for that. Leaving them does not make you more spiritual. Leaving them takes away from that essence.
Yeah. How did you take that message?
Actually, I was really proud of him.
Yeah.
He goes, you're absolutely spot on.
Oh, boy.
And to me, that takes a pretty courageous man to be able to step up to the plate and say, you know what? You're right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We do need our mirrors. And I'm very honest with my clients.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I try and soften the blow sometimes. But I also feel that calling a spade and looking at where we are
mm-hmm.
responsible and where we're not acting responsibly is the key to change, transformation. Because we have to, the bottom line is we have to take responsibility for who we are and what we do every day. Our actions, our thoughts, and the consequences that come thereof.
Well, I think that that's one of the major differences with the whole New Age philosophy. And people will badmouth, you know, New Age philosophy by saying, oh, you know, it's too soft, it's too pretty. You know, everybody turns it into what they want. But really, the main message is responsibility. Where before, it was always, you know, fate, destiny, you know, I can't control what happens to me. You know, there's this omnipotent God who will send me to heaven or hell just on a whim. I mean, that comes from the Puritans. And I mean,
it's pervasive in our country. And I swear sometimes it's even pervasive. That feeling has been embedded in the bricks of the building.
Oh, yeah. I think so, too. It's in our DNA.
Yeah.
You know, and it's trying to change that mentality around to, I really am a co-creator with God and all that is. However I see that, you know, it's hard to put it into words. It's so huge. But really, I am responsible, and I am part of this dance, and I have choreographed it for lifetimes, you know, and to actually take responsibility. It's because we don't want to blame ourselves for all of the gunk, you know, all the bad stuff that we've created.
Right.
At the same time, it's
easier to say somebody else's problem. And
what's that?
It's much easier to blame somebody else and say, oh, you created this.
Oh, yeah.
You did that to me.
Oh, yeah. The whole victim mentality.
Right.
It has to go.
It does have to go.
Yeah, it absolutely has to go. And it will. And I think it slowly is going. And yet, you know, we live in now the most legalistic, litigious society where you can sue somebody for anything because you can blame them for anything.
Right, which absolutely amplifies it.
Yeah, so we kind of have both going on at the moment, which is kind of humorous. But
it is humorous. You got to look at it that way.
Yeah, you have to laugh at it. So.
But see, sometimes I almost feel that, you know, the different stages of moving towards responsibility at that level, the victim level, it's almost as if you're still what I would say in kindergarten, first grade type of life.
Yeah.
And if you choose to move out of that and move on to college and graduate school and into real life, that's when you start taking responsibility.
Oh, interesting.
Because it is so easy to blame.
Yeah.
You know, it's always somebody else's fault. My premise, though, and I people that work with me on a more regular basis go, I don't want to hear this again, Candy. Because what I'll do is they say, the reality is, what is the adage? And they go, okay, it's all about me. Does it always have to be all about me? Because in reality, that's what it is. It's all about you, Mary. It's all about me.
Mm-hmm.
It's all
mm-hmm.
about whoever out there. Everything that happens is all about you. You
created
it. And that's when it really does get into quantum physics and the perception of the that the mind creates everything.
Yeah.
That's all scientifically.
I know. And the paradox, because I think life is just constantly paradoxical, is that we find happiness when we realize that it is all us and it is all about us. At the same time, when we can find the selflessness to love everything that is and not focus on self. I mean, it's like you have this dynamic between the paradox happening constantly. You know what I'm saying?
It is. It's the constant paradox.
Yeah, it is. It's mind-boggling, and a lot of people just want to choose the simple way, and you know that's fine. But yeah, I know what you understand. I know what you're saying about the kindergarten mentality. It's like, okay, you are a grown-up now, and it is time to take responsibility for your life. And boy, that can be a tough pill.
That's a really tough one.
Yeah.
And I'm going to use my dad as an example.
Mm-hmm.
My dad is 78. 3 weeks ago, he had a blood vessel break on the retina of his right eye. And what that did is it totally crowded the eye with blood. And there's so much blood that the ophthalmologist can't do anything. So at this point, he's legally blind in it. Now, what's real important to understand is that he's legally blind in his left eye. So he went from vision to zero in a matter of seconds. And he's been a very active man. He and my mom will go golfing 18 holes. They went water skiing every day this week, but this last summer when it was so nice. So it's been a real shift in his lifestyle and his perception of himself.
Mm-hmm.
Now what he's done, now this is where it comes back to taking responsibility. I love this. He's been a great role model for me. Yeah, that's not to say he doesn't have his weaknesses, and I won't go into that. However, there are certain things about his character that are truly wonderful. And throughout this whole process, he's been extremely positive. Now what he did is he went to the ophthalmologist, and the ophthalmologist told him, contrary to what he'd been told his whole life, because, of course, the machines are so much better today, equipment, that his eyes had always been lazy and that it did fully develop. He was told as a child it never developed, so he didn't go any further. And because he's been told his wing was blind and that eyes since he was a small boy.
Mm-hmm.
What he's been doing over the last 3 weeks is he has been working with his mind, his brain, to send energy through the eye so that he can improve the vision on that. And in 3 weeks' time, through his conscious, positive thinking, and I'm sure he has had his moments of utter despair. I mean,
uh-huh.
You go into that full scare thing. I'm not going to go, say that hasn't happened. But when he's talked to me, he's been consciously working on that sight again, and he has improved his vision in that left eye so much that if he puts on a pair of glasses and then uses a magnifying glass, he can read.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Isn't that amazing? But that goes back into the power of transformation and manifesting and saying, I'm not going to buy into this. I am going to see what I can do about it and taking responsibility for it.
Right.
Now, that right eye may or may not ever come back. His hope throughout this, in my view, is that his left eye. So that, to me, is where we're going to go. Now, you have to understand, too, as listeners, my parents have thought I was a little bit of a voodoo queen because they don't understand what it is that I do. And I haven't really gone into depth and detail on that, but I am an intuitive. I can see all kinds of things. I feel like I've got pretty good vision. I've got really good hearing on things. I've got a pretty good connection. You know, my cell tower, I stand pretty close to the cell tower, and I'm not trying to say that with any kind of ego invested because it's really not. I just, that's where I live. It's right next to the cell tower. That's pretty cool. And then on top of that, because of my own experiences that went into healing and then dropping the fear that, yes, I can do this to others because the universe kept saying, all right, Candy, this is what you are going to do, because I kept trying to avoid it, thinking that this wasn't my path. But I was told 25 years ago, yes, this would be my path, which I was kind of not sure. However, combining the two, or all all of the concepts together really is my life, and mm-hmm. I'm very grateful for it. However, with my parents, they don't even ask. I don't even go there. I do not push it on them at all. However, my dad, in one of my last conversations, was very open to, well, you do what you need to do. Let's make it work.
Mm-hmm.
So that, to me, is also a part of the dynamic, is mm-hmm. that he became open to something prior to this that he's been closed to.
Have you been working on him?
I haven't yet. And it's also about me working through my own belief patterns.
Okay.
So yes, I can help him with his sight.
Okay. So you haven't actually gone in there energetically and worked on him yet. You've suggested ways that he can help himself.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
But I haven't gone there yet. But see, they're coming over for the holidays, so
okay.
it's one of those things I want to sit down in person with him so he can feel my energy.
Okay, great.
But the greatest point with this is that at 78 he's taken responsibility, and I think that
right.
is such a great example of what we can do and what we can manifest.
Oh, yeah.
What we can create, and again, that how it revolves back to me, which goes in every essence, how it goes back to you, how it mm-hmm. goes back to every individual. It's all about us, because even though it's happening to my dad, it forces me to really assess my own belief as to what is possible.
Right, right. Oh, I'm so glad that he's getting better.
Yes.
Oh, good. Well, I see that we have about 10 minutes left in the program here, and I think it is important for the listeners to know maybe a little bit more about what you do. I don't know if this is a time for you to talk about your website, or I don't know.
That's a great point. Go to my website. It's www.candiasanders.com. And I have written a whole bunch of news stories. I don't know if my webpage person has gotten them on there yet. She's very busy, and so it's not as quick as I would like. But there are stories on there that I think are very good about different people who have really changed their life through, again, being responsible. And all I did for them was I got to be their mirror. I got to be the lucky person that told them from their higher self perspective all the potential that they have as individuals, and to see the mirror so they could see it so that they could move on and do mm-hmm. something with their life and following their passion. I feel that's part of what doesn't happen with people is they get stuck. We get very stuck. We get stuck on our health. We get stuck in our relationships, and we get stuck with abundance. We become stuck, and so much of it is based on old patterns of belief that comes down to us literally on the DNA and in our cellular level, on the cellular level from our family lineage, as well as the beliefs that we carry with us from our childhood. Now, there are a lot of different ways today that you can work with those old patterns. There are computers now that they have created to help you. You know, they zap you with electricity and they reprogram you that way. There are, of course, the mental games where you can, you know, consciously start working with your brain patterns. I work with helping shift patterns by going in energetically into the frequencies of patterns that I see as literal. They're tangible, that I can go in and help shift and then help rewrite those programs within the subconscious, as well as then look at the patterns by bringing up old pictures so that the person can then say, oh, yep, that is a part of me. Oh, I remember. So that person can then have a clear idea as to where they want to go, and so they can fully manifest their passion. Because that's what I think we have lost, are our passions. And that feeling of being passionate and being joyful and being happy. We mm-hmm. get caught up in the day-to-day drama instead of going back into awareness. And that's where I feel very lucky, is that I get to be somebody's mirror to say, oh my golly, have you thought about this? This is what you're really good at. And they go, yeah, I thought about that. I used to have that dream when I was 8 years old.
Oh.
Well, okay, then let's bring it into fruition. What are the steps? What is needed to create that? Because that's where we get stuck. And then once you have those steps, you can
I wanted to tell the listeners about the time that you worked on my son when he was a sophomore in high school. And I wanted everybody to know that.
I hate to say this, but you got to talk fast because they're going to cut us off here.
They're going to cut us off in just a second. Well, you don't have to be there in person. And Candy is able to access a person's energetic field from wherever you happen to be. You can be hundreds of miles away. And when my son was a sophomore, he was in a funk. He had broken up with a girlfriend. He was feeling down. He was 15 years old. My gosh, you know, the world was just caving in on him. And he just was not his sweet, joyful self, let's put it that way. And she worked on him for an hour when he was asleep one day. And I literally was on the phone with her. She was 200 miles away and was able to listen as she healed my son step by step, took an hour. And when that kid got up, he was a different person. And I have never seen anything so amazing in my life. And he was happy. He was smiling. She had done some soul retrieval on him where he had reacted through some past life trauma. He was relating to that in the current time, and she brought him all back together, and it was absolutely amazing. He is now 18. He is pursuing his passions. He is a happy boy. And I always think back to that time, and that was probably one of the most astonishing things, although there have been other moments, Candia, where you have blown me away, too. But I want them to understand that you can do this from any location, that it is a gift where you're able to access...
it's on the quantum level.
Yeah, on the quantum level. Okay.
It doesn't matter. Time is irrelevant. Distance is totally irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, Mary, thank you so much for sharing that. I know we're getting close to getting ready to shut down the program for today.
Well, thanks for having me on. It was a lot of fun.
It's been fabulous, as always. You were always such a wonderful inspiration and a great mirror for me.
Well, thank you. You too.
And just think, if Mary were your child's teacher, how cool would that be?
Oh.
We need more people like that. And next week, Mike will probably be back on. We will both be on the Odyssey Show next week. Please stay tuned. We will be on tonight at 9 o'clock again. And again, check out Mike's Sands of Time DVD. And thank you for joining the Odyssey Radio Show. It's been great having you with us and sharing in on Mary's and my stories today. Have a fabulous holiday. Enjoy the solstice. And again, check out other programs on bbsradio.com. Awesome programming. Thank you again, and have a great weekend.